Hi, welcome to She Will Not Be Silenced with Keisha Shields, the podcast for women leaders on a mission to change the world and build empires that have legacy, success, influence, and intergenerational wealth. We'll talk about how stigmas, stereotypes, grief, and other people's opinions can keep women's voices silenced, and the impact these have on successful women and their emotions, their relationships, and their money. If you have felt silenced and need guidance, awakening, and amplifying your voice, visit KeishaShields.com to check out my best-selling Find Your Voice course. Please take a quick second to hit the subscribe button and let's get into this week's episode. Dr. Wajita L. Small is the founder and CEO of Capital Conscious You, LLC, a leadership development firm focused on helping career and entrepreneur women find and align their purpose with their careers and business. Dr. Small is a certified purpose leader, certified human capital strategist, and certified professional coach with specialties in career, executive, and spiritual coaching. She also holds a doctorate in human capital management with a research emphasis on women of color and leadership. Dr. Wajita Small has a podcast called Leading with Purpose, and I encourage you to go ahead and check it out. Now let's get into our episode. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of She Will Not Be Silenced with Keisha Shields. And I'm sitting here with this lovely lady. If you guys are watching the video, you'll see her smile already. She's the kind of person that, like, even if you don't see their mouth open, you can see the smile on their face. And I love that. I love that so much. For those of you who are not seeing her, don't forget that this is a video episode. So you can click on her episode webpage and get the link to the video and everything else that we'll be talking about here. Dr. Wajita Small, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Hello, and thank you for having me. Yeah. I'm really excited. Can you tell?
Yeah. So Dr. Wajita has her own podcast, which I'll let her tell you all about. So she's a pro at this. I told her that. So we're just going to flow into the conversation and be good to go. So Dr. Wajita, tell our listeners today, who is Dr. Wajita Small?
Sure. So I am a woman of many things. So personally, I am a daughter, a sister. I am a wife. I am really a laid back person, or at least I think I'm laid back anyway, for the most part. I really do just kind of like to chill and just live the life that's in front of me. When I describe what I actually do, I describe it in terms of head work and heart work, or, you know, profession and purpose. So my profession, I am an HR executive in New York at a nonprofit organization, but my purpose is to help women of color thrive in every space that they enter. And I do that by coaching. I do that by being a mentor. I do that through various platforms like my podcast. I write a blog and also my book that just recently came out.
Tell us about your book, because we're going to come back to the other stuff. But tell us about the book since you just mentioned it.
Sure. So it's currently on pre-order and it focuses on women of color and leadership. And the foundation of the book is my doctoral research. So we talk about leadership. I share my own model for leadership. And then I share the stories, most of the women from my research that I interviewed. And it's called Our Leadership Journey, Shared Stories, Lessons, and Advice for Women of Color. And the lessons and advice, I literally tried to throw everything in there that I've ever learned, that I was ever told, that helped me get over all of the roadblocks that have been placed in front of me, that I've placed in front of myself to get to the place where I am today. So that is my first child. first and only so far. And I am really, really excited about it. It took me 3 years to write it.
Okay.
And we are finally here. And I'm just so happy that it is now available for everyone that needs it. I liken it to literally like a mentor that you can bring with you. It's, you know, representation is very important.
Yes.
And a lot of us don't have representation. I don't even want to say as we climb the corporate ladder, but just kind of in general.
Yeah.
We're usually the only ones there. And when we're the only ones there, when we're the only ones at the table, we tend to think we're the only ones going through it.
Yes.
And we're not. Nope. There are other women like us. There's support. And I hope this is what that can be for those of us that, you know, feel lonely.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're not alone.
No, we're not. And, you know, it always, like, it makes me smile, not necessarily in a good way, but whenever I'm having these, like, conversations and dialoguing with other women leaders who work with women leaders, it always, always, without fail, gets mentioned that we feel like we're alone, like we're the only one. Mm-hmm. Alone, because a lot of times, physically, in the space, we're the only one. So then naturally, sometimes you feel like you're the only one, even when there are so many of us feeling the same way, you know? So it makes me smile because, like, no matter what industry, no matter anything, it always comes up every single time. And for those of you all listening, like, I talked about this in one of my previous episodes, like, one of the reasons why I actually decided to go ahead and do my podcast was because I remember feeling, and I would listen to my clients, and I'm like, we still are feeling like we're on this island by ourselves. Like, you don't see a lot of you in various situations, and it's not just in the workplace. Like, we know that's a big one, but sometimes even in personal life, you know, when you're moving in different directions, you don't often see representation of, you know, someone who is like you, who's conquered things really before you, or if you do, they're usually still so far removed, like, inaccessible, you know, which is a challenge on its own. I'm really excited that you mentioned your book, because I'm going to pre-order it, and I've been writing this book too, and I really need to get my hiney going, but I've been having so many...
It's hard.
Oh my gosh.
Like, so people... I know we all have a story, and my publisher says we all have a story to tell, but writing a book has got to be one of the hardest things that I have ever done, because it really is putting...
Okay, just so you all know, okay?
and honestly, though, no lie, it was harder than writing my dissertation. Because, like, when you write a book, you put yourself out there.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You become vulnerable. And this isn't only my story, but I also have to do diligence to the women that I'm telling their stories. And it's kind of like, it has to be right, because it's not just for me. Like, if it was for me, I'd be like, okay, I would be okay with okay, but it's not for me. And so it's kind of like, no, it has to be right. Like, with the research, like, you know, the statistics and all those things are hard, but it's more of an interpretation rather than like documenting your own truth, your own story. Like, research, you're interpreting data.
Mm-hmm. I was going to ask, so in your book, do you talk about your journey and your story as like a main theme and then use others' journeys to kind of mirror that? Or is it more like narrative?
More like narrative. My story is literally at the end, because like I said, it wasn't about me, but it made sense to share a piece of myself, which was really the hardest part, because I'm a very private person. Mm-hmm. So to really share anything of myself was, I think for me, was one of the most difficult. But I really wanted it to focus on women of color as a whole, not just my individual experience, because my experience is unique to me, even though there are women that share the same experience, that hasn't necessarily been a guide, if you will. So I tried to make it as holistic as possible. So like, I share the model that I created about leadership. So that's kind of the foundation. I talk about, you know, and I use some stats and some of the research, because again, it's founded in the research. I talk about women of color in leadership, what the the research says our experiences are. I talk about the themes that came out. So I talk about, like, you know, culture and the fact that we have multiple roles that pull us in multiple directions,
yeah,
that we often have conflict within ourselves. You know, we're taught that family, and again, culturally, family is above everything,
mm-hmm,
even ourselves. So we have that internal conflict, like, you know, I know I need to work a little bit later because I'm up for this promotion, but I need to be home because of X. And then you don't necessarily have the support you need over here to say, no, girl, I got you, go do you, because I know you have goals.
Yes.
You know, fear in all of the ways in which it manifests itself. You know, stereotypes and how we internalize that. Stereotype threat, which is actually falling prey to the stereotype. You know, if they say, you know, they have this perception that you're an angry Black woman, you know, they push you so hard, you're like, you know what? I'm gonna be that angry Black woman.
Yep.
That, so, and that doesn't help you, you know, judgment, all of those things. And then again, like I said, I tried to throw everything in terms of, like, everything that I've learned, been taught, the lessons, the advice that I've been given. And a lot of that focuses on, how do we get out of our own way? How do we recognize when environments are conducive for our ascension into leadership? How do we invest in ourselves to make ourselves better? And then also, how do we support each other? Because we don't do that very well, you know, and everyone's heard the term, it's very much a crabs in a barrel mentality. And, you know, it's like, I fought so hard to get here. Like, why am I going to help somebody else? Well, you know, because that's what you're supposed to do. Like, you were given a gift to share. Now, at least, let me rephrase, that is my belief. Yeah. If you are given a gift, the expectation is that you're supposed to share it, not hoard it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the saying, reach back as you climb, like, you know, somebody helped you. I don't believe anyone ever does anything by themselves, whether you know someone helped you or not. Someone helped you. So pay it forward.
Look, you know that someone helped you. Now, people may not want to acknowledge that, but let's be clear, anyone who has experienced anything has had help at some time or another. You know, now sometimes that help has been a hindrance, which sometimes helps you grow, you know, in mm-hmm. other ways, but you're right. And I wonder, you know, as well, if part of the challenge is that a lot of us haven't, in the culture we live in, we just haven't been taught how to support. Especially like this generation, I feel like we're at a place where we're finally able to get a little bit more ahead. So it mm-hmm. feels kind of edgy for people, right? To feel like, oh, well, I'm going to lose this little bit that I have, right? If I come mm-hmm. back and help others, when actually group dynamics, like if we all can rise together, the level of power and influence that we have
yes.
amplifies.
Absolutely. And what's interesting is that from a cultural perspective, we're very much a community. And when you take us out of the community, it's like we're in survival mode.
Mm-hmm.
And the mentality is, it's like, I cannot help you if I cannot help myself.
Yeah.
Which is why part of what I talk about is the importance of investing and giving from a surplus. You know, you can't give from a half full cup, because when you give it, you literally will have nothing else. Yeah. So making sure that you invest in yourself and develop yourself to a point where you have a surplus where you can gift, right? And one of my mentors, and she talks about this in regards to money, but I think it's something that can be applied across the board. She says, if I can't gift it, I can't give it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so whatever it is, you should be in a position to gift it so that you're not taking from yourself, because it's also showing us the importance of, we're important too.
Yeah.
We're just as, if not important, than anyone that we're trying to help. And it's, again, so we're culturally, we're very much about community. We go into these corporate spaces or, you know, other predominantly white spaces, whether it's college, you know, the workforce, we're taken out of our community. And when you think about just our history, you know, what we're socialized to understand and believe what our experiences are, it's very much about survival mode. Mm-hmm. And it's just kind of like, no, I just have to do for me. But to the point that you made, when we are all rising, we have so much more power. You, that one person, will be so more powerful. And if anything, the fact that you are helping everybody else, they will look to you as being a leader.
Yes. Yes. Like, you get the collective power, and also it lessens the burnout, right? It mm-hmm. is really overwhelming to try yeah. to be the martyr who handles everything. I mean, it is hard. That crap mm-hmm. is very overrated, right? You know, like the idea of like the superhero woman who, like, oh, she can do all this. Like, I remember seeing, like, it was like one of those, like, images that have like the people, like these white people on the track, and like the women have like ironing boards and like stuff and like clothes, like all along their way running around the track while the men just like going. It's kind of like that idea of being mm-hmm. that you have to put on and do all of the things, right, to appear whatever or to uphold some type of expectation. But that crap is very burdensome, you know.
It is, but what I don't think people understand is that it has been proven, in particular for Black women, that it is detrimental to our health. Mm-hmm. We have an increased morbidity rate because mm-hmm. we try to be everything to everyone all the time and do all the things, but we're taught to do that. Mm-hmm. We're socialized to do that. And I think it's important for us to break that cycle, because it's literally killing yes. us mm-hmm. to try and be everything.
Yeah,
like we're not made for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm just like reflecting on it and thinking about just like in the people I know and like just seeing, you know, how it literally does, like, it, even the toe, it will literally, like, wear your body down. You can see, like, your bones mm-hmm. breaking down, like, your mental mm-hmm. health starts to, you know, sometimes, you know, take a beating, like, it you said a word right there, and it's true, and, you know, and hopefully we can continue to have the courage to emulate, you're right, the type of mm-hmm. behavior that we think will help, that we know will kind of help pull us all up and together. Because being a leader, it comes with its own set of things. And I think that a lot of times people think, oh, well, because I'm a leader, you know, I have to know all things. Like, I have to know the answers. I have to know how to do, right? That I have to be the one that is in the forefront all the time. And that's not true.
Not true at all. If anything, as a leader, you're still learning. Mm-hmm. You learn things from the people that you lead. Like, I talk about, like, my mentees all the time. I learn some things, some things I don't care to know, but other things I'm just kind of like, okay, I like that perspective. Mm-hmm. This is new to me. I'm going, like, I see the benefit in shifting a mindset, shifting how I do things. And as a leader, you can't just be one thing. It's not just one person.
Yeah.
Even just yourself, we evolve mm-hmm. every single day. And what you thought was the right thing yesterday is probably not going to be the right thing mm-hmm. today. And for me, leadership really is about an exchange, and you have to be able to meet people where they are. Mm-hmm. Because I think a lot of the things that we tend to do because we're trying to do so much is we get into a very, like, one track, you know, one way of doing things because it's the easiest thing or the fastest thing or the most efficient thing. But that might not be the right thing for the person you need to support or the person mm-hmm. that's supporting you. And I think it's important for us to realize that too, because that also supports the burnout.
Yes. Yes.
We're not shifting at the right time and in the right way because we get stuck because we're doing too much.
So a literal cycle, right?
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
Yeah. You get stuck because you're doing too much because of this. And then because of that, you get stuck, you know, and it's cycles, there's so many cycles that we have to really be mindful of. So let me ask you this, Wajita. Have you had any experiences in your life? It can be from childhood all the way up until present day life, where you either felt silenced. It could be because you noticed it later on in life that you were silenced, or a time when you really struggled to find and really use your voice.
Yes. And hopefully we have time for a quick story.
Yes, we do.
And honestly, I will say I was silenced for about 13 years. And it started in the seventh grade. And I will never forget it because it literally changed who I was.
Hey.
And I was in the seventh grade in math class. And I was sitting next to this boy, wasn't Black. And I say that because he said something about my Blackness.
Okay.
And my mom always told me, it doesn't matter who they are, never let anyone disrespect you.
Okay.
So I was always a person, I will check you right then and there, because mm-hmm. we're just not having that. My mama told me, don't let anyone disrespect me. Yeah. So we're not going there. And generally, that's when I would say something. Because I have always been a relatively quiet person. Like, I had my small group of friends, but like, I was the one that went home, didn't stay out, did my homework, watched TV. I was just, mm-hmm. I was always the one that was over there just observing.
Absolutely, yes.
Because again, unless it's something of value, like I'm not going to talk for the sake of talking because people like that annoyed me. Just kind of like, you have nothing valuable to say. Why are you talking right
You're
now?
You're not going
to
be new BS.
And that's the thing. I would always get in trouble. Like we go to the report card. I have hundreds, but then you have that little mark that says, you know, Wajita talks in class a lot.
Okay.
No, Wajita doesn't talk in class. Wajita has to constantly check people because people always have something rude and racist and negative and inappropriate to say about her as a Black girl. And again, mama said we don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
So this kid said something to me. I said something to him, interrupted the class, and my math teacher decided that he wanted to say something to me. But for him, he wanted to point it out, make it a big production, literally yelling at me in front of the entire class, trying to embarrass me. And we all know that's what happens to a lot of us in schools anyway.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Tried to embarrass me. And I was always been told to respect my elders,
Yes. But
never let anyone disrespect you. So I politely told him he was being disrespectful. He wants to make a spectacle. He sends me out of the classroom and tells me that I can't come back. Like, I can't leave school until the parent comes to pick me up because he needs to talk to my parent. So my stepfather comes and they have the little conference and he's telling him what the situation is. And my stepfather, he listens and, you know, what parents do, he apologizes, you know, Ajita shouldn't have, you know, interrupted the class, but she has every right to tell you that you should not disrespect her. We teach her not to allow anyone to disrespect her. And he's just like, well, she was just so obnoxious. I had never been called obnoxious in my entire life. And like, that was a serious like blow to me, because it was just kind of like, obnoxious is just not what we do. Like, yeah. Obnoxious is just like a really, really bad thing. And for my teacher to say that I was obnoxious, it was just kind of like, well, damn, like, I don't know, it was that bad. And like, I really internalized that. And from that point forward, it was just kind of like, you know what? I didn't say anything, right? If somebody said something, I was like, you know what? Whatever. Or, you know, I would wait. I would wait until after school or whatever, or have one of my friends say something. And I got into a habit of either not saying anything or having other people speak for me.
Mm.
And, you know, I think I missed out on a lot, especially a lot of, I think, very valuable relationships And again, it's 13 years, because I was about 25, 26. And I had recently started a new job, and I had a supervisor, and this was actually the first time I had ever worked for a white person in my entire life.
Wow.
So that in and of itself,
wow,
was an experience for me. And I was like, okay, but again, I was always a person that did what I was supposed to do. I followed the rules. I did my job. You got no argument from me, because I wasn't trying to get in trouble, right? I'm in HR, so we're going through a recruitment process. We implemented a new system, all of these guidelines. This was like a time where like the onboarding recruitment process, there were like laws in which you had to do for like background checks. And if you had like an onboarding system, et cetera, there were just things you had to follow. I've always followed the rules. Rules make me comfortable. It eases my mind because I can anticipate what's supposed to happen, right? So she, in her way of trying to schmooze with the manager of a particular department, because she wanted to make that alliance, she wanted us to deviate from the process. Okay, I'll admit, I had some anxiety about it because we're deviating from an established process. But whatever, nothing terrible, I'll do it. It made more work for us, which she was not participating in any of the work. Usually. We were doing 60-hour weeks. She was going home. She's my boss. Yeah. Whatever. Mm-hmm. Didn't say nothing. And she constantly wanted us to make these changes. She wanted to cut this piece of the process out for them. I can understand that particular demographic needs a slightly easier process, but so long as we're following the rules of the law, fine. It takes more work because it's more handholding, but whatever. But then she wanted us to start doing things that weren't in compliance. And it was just kind of like, I don't know. And she started to name drop the big boss. Now, the big boss, I knew him from a previous organization. He brought me over. Like, I knew him. He brought me over. He respected my work. We didn't have a really great relationship. This was before he became my mentor. But I knew enough of him to just be like, this don't sound right to me. But it was like, okay. And I would, you know, my team, like I talked to him, I was like, oh, you know, she wants us to do this. And we all had like the little, like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. But then it got to the point where she wanted to take that one department out of the whole entire process completely, which means everything that we did for them was different than what we were doing for the entire organization. And it was just kind of like, okay, you made a little extra right now. Mm-hmm. I need to go confirm that the boss wants us to do this. And I went to him, and he was a rather robust man, and he would always sit back in his chair, cross his fingers over his stomach, and lean back in his chair. And so he does this, and I knew I was in for an earful because he talked a lot. And when he did that, you just needed to sit down and listen. Okay. And he says, now Wajida, would I say something like that? I said, well, no, that's why I'm asking you. And he's like, but clearly this has been going on for a long time. Why didn't you come to me sooner? And I said, well, I don't want to get in trouble. And he just gave me this look, and he's like, now what kind of trouble do you think you were going to get? And like, do you really think I was going to fire you for this? And it dawned on me like, no, because I know it doesn't make sense. Mm. I know it's wrong.
Yes.
I know I should say something about it. So no, I wouldn't get fired because I know I'm right. I know what I have to say is valuable because something isn't going the way that it's supposed to do. And was like, at that moment, it was like, okay, no. He said, you need to use your voice. You need to speak up. What you have to say is valuable. And then, of course, he patted himself on the back. He's like, well, why do you think I hired you in the first place? And it was mostly that kind of,
yes,
like, wait a second. It kind of brought it back to me. It was just kind of like, hold on. Like, it's like, I got my voice back. Like, yeah. And I mean, I have been going through some things in like my personal life too, mm-hmm. that kind of was a catalyst, and it was just everything culminating together. But him saying, you need to use your voice.
Yeah.
Like, you need to speak up.
Yeah.
Was like, your words are valuable. Mm-hmm. I guess, I don't know. It's like, you know, I needed that external validation because I knew it in my heart. Just like, I need to say something, but I was so like, because every time I spoke up, mm-hmm. I got in trouble.
Yep. Absolutely.
You know, every time I spoke against something that I knew was wrong, I got in trouble, mm-hmm. or it caused like an argument, or it caused a fight. And it was just kind of like, you know, mm-hmm. I just held it in and didn't say anything. And it was just kind of like, okay, well, no. And from that day forward, yeah, this girl was not shutting up for no one. Nope. And, yeah. No. And I'm a firm believer in speaking when you have something valuable to say, mm-hmm. not speaking for the sake of just talking, just yeah. so that you can hear yourself talk.
Yeah.
And again, like I said, I'm always a quiet person. I sit there, observe, I process the information mm-hmm. first before I respond to it.
Yeah.
But it was just kind of like, don't let anybody in a meeting ask me, Wajida, do you have anything to say? Oh, do I? Why, yes. Here are all the things that I have to say.
Absolutely. And they're probably already listed somewhere in your notes because like, I know I keep a mental record of things that mm-hmm. I do the same thing. You know, I love that story that you shared, that experience that you had, because what happened there was really significant. Like even looking in from like the outside, to have someone in a higher above position, right, mm-hmm. can really look at you and see you and hear you, right? And say, you know what I mean? Like, you need to use your voice. Because the reason why I started my specialty in women needing to use their voice, learn how to speak up, that's all of what my coaching and consulting is about. Because I had a similar situation to you. I didn't have anyone to tell me that it was okay to actually use my mm-hmm. voice. I was recording, ironically, a YouTube video, which is not released yet, but it will be, where I talked about a situation in the workplace where they were doing some very shady, unethical, non-compliant things. So when you said that, I'm like,
yeah.
I'm like, this is not, there's some, you like, you just know. I'm like, there's really something the matter here. This is not okay. And I started to get worried, like, because I didn't want to get caught up in anything, you know. Mm-hmm. I didn't want my name, you know, because I played by the rules, you know, nearly my whole life, the same like you, you know. I didn't do things to get in trouble. I was out the way, you know, and all of that. So, but I didn't have that. And it created, furthered a dynamic I already had on the inside that, you know, you're not, that you just kind of have to sit here and shut up and take it, if that makes sense, right? Like, because mm-hmm. I was like, well, if I yep. speak up, I'm going to lose my job, or I'm going to do this, right? Mm-hmm. I was legitimately worried about those things, you know, at the time. Mm-hmm. And I just think about how powerful it was for you to have someone that you could trust and go to, and they tell you and really affirm the significance of your voice. You know what I mean? And the power that it has, you know, to be able to utilize mm-hmm. that. And like, I didn't have that for myself, even in my personal life. And it's like, when I really got down to the bottom of it, I'm like, okay, I want to be that person for someone else, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I want to yep. be that person that really affirms the significance of their voice. Like, I would let people speak over me, even though I had great, great ideas and all of that stuff. And just like you now, sometimes they don't even want to ask. Keisha, do you have anything to say? Like, they know. As a matter of fact, there were about 8 things I wanted to bring you up.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Right. But mm-hmm. I found for myself that it really brought me home to who I was. I didn't realize how much power I had been giving away by not feeling mm-hmm. secure with the power yeah. of my voice. You know what I mean? And of the wisdom and things that I had to put out there. And it's crazy how one little thing can make such an impact on just your future, like the rest mm-hmm. of your life, you know?
Absolutely. And I think, well, one, I think what you're doing is extremely important. Like, it really hits me here because people intentionally try to silence us. Mm-hmm. And we have to be aware of that.
Yeah.
And we have to be aware of the true power of our voice, because what I had not realized was that, because, and, you know, again, you know, even though you don't know people are helping you, you also, people are always watching.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And what I had not realized is that people were looking to me to say something. People were looking to me to say what was right. Yeah. People were looking to me as a leader.
Yeah.
Before I even knew what leadership was, people, you know, people were looking to me as a leader of my team, of the work that we were doing. Even people that I didn't even think cared 2 cents were always trying to throw me under the bus. Mm-hmm. They were looking to me to make the change that was needed. And that change would only happen if I spoke up.
Yes.
And after I started to kind of get that groove and I started, you know, spitting those bars, like folks were just, people were literally, they would just, oh, can, oh, I, no, no, no. I, can I speak to Wajida?
Yeah.
Oh, no. Well, you know, I can transfer you to, no, no, no. I call because I want to speak to you.
Yeah.
It was kind of like, oh, yeah. Well, hello. Yeah.
So let me ask you this, coming on the heels of that conversation, how have you shifted and evolved from that experience?
I think I have been better at empowering others, and I've very much come out of, I'll say my shell, because again, still a quiet person. Like, I sit back, like meetings, just kind of like, okay, I'm learning. I prefer to be behind the camera versus in front of the camera. Still a very private person, but I understand the importance that my voice has for other people, especially being an advocate for those that have not found their voice just yet.
Yes.
And in doing that and in sharing my story, because again, didn't say nope. People would wonder, like, can she even like speak? And it would be like, who is this person? Because I was literally like, I was just like a shadow. I was just like a ghost. I came and I went. It was just kind of like, who is this person? Like, it was like, I was literally a mystery. And I realized too, in sharing my experiences and telling my story, I empower others to find their voice. Mm-hmm. And to the point that you made before about the collective, yes, my one voice is powerful, but collectively our voices together.
Yes.
And we're doing that now. You see us doing that now in the world. And it's just kind of like, yes.
Yeah.
I'm so glad to be a part of this.
Yes. I mean, it really is. It's very empowering. And I love when I see it kind of permeating through so many different areas of life. Like before social, let's take social justice, for example, was just social justice. It was not the workplace, right? And now you're seeing that it's institutions cannot keep those worlds separate anymore, right? And people are taking their voices from outside and bringing them into work now and doing all of the things. And so it is so kind of encouraging, like, to see that, you know, where my kind of little, like, tidbit comes in with that is I love it. And I want to see us doing that in things that are not social justice related, per se. Right. Like, they're not like mass movements, because there's a lot of everyday things that our voices need to be speaking up about that affect us directly. Right. And it's like, sometimes we use the collective as a crutch. Right. And we do have to be mindful of that. Right. Mm-hmm. We start to echo only what we hear others saying, even though we're using it in new places, rather than take that same voice and shift the discussions into things that have significance and immediate relevance to what you are navigating. I think if we can do that more as a collective, the dynamic of so much will change.
I wholeheartedly agree with everything that you just said. I think we do that because, and I just going back to me, I used to have other people speak for me, mm-hmm. because it was kind of like, at least I'm being heard, but am I? Because that's not my voice.
Right.
You know, sometimes things get lost in translation. They may get the gist of it, but that might not actually be the message that I'm trying to get across.
Absolutely.
So great movements are important, but it's also different when it comes from you.
Yeah, it does. And, you know, a lot of that has to do with, you know, when something is your lived experience, there's a whole different dynamic that comes with the relaying what it is that you're trying to say, you know, because I can tell someone, oh, this is what I wish I could say, and they could say it, but it hits so differently when it's coming from what you are living and what you are navigating, you know. And part of what I want, you know, in my piece of the world is for us to get the courage and the confidence within ourselves that those conversations are just as powerful as the ones that society is telling us are. Because if we're not okay, our impact on the world is not going to be great. You know, it goes, you know, so many ways when you're fighting and advocating for everyone else, and you can't do it for yourself. You know how you say you have people speak for you? I was that person who spoke for everybody. Like, they would always say, this is what, Keisha, you should say something. You should say, I was always that, but I couldn't speak up for myself. Right? Because it, it caused disruption. I was often like misunderstood. Oh, she's trying to be this way. And I'm like, no, I'm not. Right? She's trying to take over. She's trying to be in control. No, I'm not. Right? So it's like, it became not safe for me to speak up for myself, but I would speak up for everyone else. And I realized what a disservice that was, because they were getting what they needed. And I was feeling miserable and not really getting ahead, because what needed to shift for me was not being spoken. You know what I mean, right? And it's like, I look back and I'm like, gosh, what a shame. But it was really a journey. And we do so much, I hate to say damage, but we cause so much disruption in our own lives when we don't speak up about various things. Like, I had an article that I wrote in the Atlanta Voice that got published yesterday, and it was about how stereotypes and stigmas impact Black women's money, like in the workplace, you know, and the common thread of it was about how we often don't speak up, you know, like you want a promotion or a raise, right? But you don't act, you're not heard, you're not seen, you know, that kind of thing, right? And so sometimes the very thing you want, the reason why you're not getting it is because the reason why you think you should. Oh, well, if I'm too vocal, then I'm going to think I'm this. Well, you're not going to get hurt otherwise. Like, this double-edged sword of having to find and navigate that. But, you know, I talked about how so many times as Black women, we feel like we have to just kind of shut up and take it in the workplace, right? Be grateful for the opportunity. Be grateful that you're here in this role, right?
And no, I worked for this.
That's exactly.
No, I worked hard for this. No, you didn't just, you just give it to me.
Absolutely. And that's the thing. And I want us to actually acknowledge that, that we did the work to get there. Yeah. They didn't just pick you up and say, oh, I'm glad. You did the work. You made the effort. You are the one doing it, right? But a lot of the policies have us believing that we should be grateful. Right, that we're there. Oh, because there's not many of you, right? There's not many. So, you know, oh, you should be grateful, you know, that kind of thing. And it's like that, in my experience, has kept so many professional women from climbing the ladder or breaking through their glass ceilings, you know, in their life. Because I always talk about the financial glass ceiling is only one. There are so many glass ceilings in our life that are capping us and keeping us where we are.
Yeah.
Right? From the relationships you're in to the dynamics you do, all of the things, right? But it keeps us from blasting through those glass ceilings because we feel like, oh, well, I'm grateful that I'm here. Like, so many people don't get here, but that's simply not enough. You earned that. You've worked for that, right? And now, because you're there, I want us to have this feel compelled to utilize that opportunity, right, to be a voice, you know what I'm saying? And so I want us to do that so much more, you know, outside of the mass issues that everyone are kind of vocally speaking about, because those are significant and the ones that impact you just on a daily basis, you know?
Mm-hmm. We're not good at self-advocacy. We will advocate for everybody else under the sun, but we won't advocate for ourselves. And to the point that you just made, it's kind of like, hold up, all these things are happening for everyone else, but they're not happening for me, because, and that's because you're not advocating for yourself. And to the point that, like, and part of that too is we are socialized to do that. We are socialized to humble ourselves, and people don't realize when you humble yourself, that means you're putting yourself beneath someone or something else. And I am not beneath anyone or anything at all. Like, we've grown out of that. We need to grow out of it.
I completely agree with you on that. And like, I know in my life it's caused, because what happens is when we grow out of that, boundaries get put in play. And a lot of people do not like being on the other side of boundaries, because they feel like you're saying something about them. And it's like, this is about me. It's about making sure that I can get.
Don't have nothing to do with you.
You know, and it's like, oh my gosh, but I have implemented so many boundaries, you know, because I let people used to like walk all over me because I didn't speak up for myself. It would get me in trouble. Like, even in the household, like, oh, they would say, oh, I'm gonna tell your dad. And I would like, all of a sudden I would like, shut up. Right? You know what I mean? I would shut up. And so that kind of stuff. But, you know, I mean, you can laugh at stuff now, like when you think back on it.
Yeah.
You know? But no.
But that's trauma. It traumatized you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's good that we have to be able to acknowledge that. A lot of us don't want to acknowledge it, because other people might feel some kind of way. But again, it's not about them. Mm-hmm. It's really about you. And what are you doing for yourself to elevate yourself and get you to the point where you're okay?
Mm-hmm.
And you're doing the things that you know that you're capable of and achieving the goals that you set out for yourself.
Exactly. Because I think about, look at how many, like, let's talk about women, how many women are successful, right? By everybody on the outside, but on the inside, they don't, a lot of times don't feel that way, because they look around and they realize that they're not actually doing what they want to be doing in their lives, right? You know, so many times what we were told we had to do, or thought we had to do, or everyone else's expectations of what we had to do have crept into so many aspects of who we are. And like, before you know it, you're like, okay, I'm doing well, but I'm not happy. I don't feel fulfilled. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean, right? It's like I've checked the box, you know?
I think for me, that's the most important thing, because a lot of what I do focuses on purpose. And that's what fulfillment is, being fulfilled. And it's being able to do what gives you the feels, do what you love, being happy unapologetically, not worrying about what anyone else has to say, what they're thinking, and just being free and being at peace.
Yes.
And I think it's the peace part. Like, I have gotten to a point where I'm at peace. Like, I'm not gonna be bothered with nobody else's mess. Like, I've grown. I'm grown now. I am still growing, and I have to, because again, I can't help you do anything if I can't help myself.
Absolutely.
If I'm not in a place where I'm happy, where I feel fulfilled, where I have a surplus of anything. And again, at the end of the day, when you think about kind of like that superwoman syndrome.
Yes.
We can't help nobody if we're dead.
Right.
Like, so y'all over here killing me. If I die, I can't help you. So let's all just take a step back.
Yes.
Let me get to where I need to be.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean I don't want to help you.
Mm-hmm.
I need to help me first.
Absolutely. Oh my God. I feel like we were encouraged more and required to do that more. What a difference. What a difference things would make, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I love that you talk about how you're just at peace. And I feel the same way. Like, I've pretty much been unbothered by most things, like most of my life, but I always felt the need to fight other people's battles, right? So if they had mm-hmm. something going on, I would step in. And people have gotten used to that. And now I do not do it unless I'm like something requires me. When I tell you, somebody told me, it's like, you seem so unbothered now. I'm like, that's exactly what I'm
because I am. Level
of peace I have. Like, so you said,
yeah.
And you know, it comes with getting older, but it's majorly shifted in me. And it's like this, the level mm-hmm. of unbotheredness and unapologeticness that I have about what I have going on. Like, I feel like I'm in this bubble in like my world, and I feel fine with that. You know what I mean? And it feels so good for me to be in that place, because for my whole life was pleasing. Well, what can I do to, you know, meet this quota or whatever the case is, you mm-hmm. know? And like now, and then people didn't like it because they were used to me stepping in to help fight their battles. And they would be fighting, and I would just be, you know, like on. You know what I mean? Like, and it was uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I mean, you're grown, I'm grown, you're not a child. I have to do so. I resonated when you said that, you know? So I have a question for you before we start wrap up, which is, what advice might you have for any of our people listening who are at a place where they really want to feel like that power, that peace that you talked about with being able to kind of speak up for themselves? What advice or suggestions might you have for them?
I am a strong proponent of self-reflection. I think it's important to engage in that exercise and really ask yourself why you don't feel as if you can. And do a root cause analysis. What is the root cause of why you don't think you can speak up? Why you don't think you can advocate yourself? Why do you think you don't have a voice? Why do you think that you have been silenced? Why have you chosen not to, you know, speak? Why have you chosen not to use your voice? Find out what that reason is and work through that.
Yeah.
To me, that would be the most important thing. Mm-hmm. And then once you're able to kind of identify what that is and start to work through that healing, because again, we don't like to say that we have experienced trauma.
Yeah.
And trauma doesn't mean like, you know, all of these terrible, terrible things. It's something that had a major negative impact on you that has changed how you operate in the world. And when you recognize it for what it is, you can start to work through it and get to the place that you see yourself being.
Yes. Yes. So I hope that whoever needed to really hear that, that you can see and give yourself the permission to reflect and to do what it is that you need to do to put on your own life preserver first, your own oxygen mask, you know, that you utilize this conversation as you see two Black women having conversation about how we have had to come from under that, those feelings of being kind of afraid to speak up for whatever reason, you know, and just seeing how much power shifts within yourself. When I tell you, for those of you who are not there yet, you're the freeing feeling that comes with knowing that you got something to say.
Yes, 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 yes. They just don't know.
I'm telling you.
But they will.
Yeah, you will. And that's what we are wanting for everyone so much, like, because it's so freeing. Like, you may not believe me, but I want you to hear what I'm saying. It will free you in so many ways, and you'll start to come back home to who you are. Like, I see that all the time, and it's not always easy to do, but it's necessary. And the shift that will happen in your life, because it starts on the inside, right? The shift that will happen in your life is something that you will not be able to deny. And that is so powerful always, mm-hmm. you know? So give yourself permission to do that. Wajida, where can our women find you, follow you? How can they connect with you?
Sure. So I am on most social media platforms. My Instagram and Twitter handles are @DrDr_WLSmall. It's the same for Facebook without the underscore. And if they want to learn more about me, you can visit my website, which is myfirstandlastname.com. So wajidasmall.com. I have, you know, literally everything about me, what I love, all the things that I am doing. Those are the best ways to kind of keep in contact, stay in touch, find out what I'm doing, and just staying connected.
And so two questions for you. Is your book pre-order on your website? Where can they go and do a pre-order for your book?
Yes. So my book is pre-order on my website. So Where? It's the same website, wajidasmall.com /book. All pre-sale orders. If you want it autographed, you get it autographed. I enjoy the idea of being able to put my name in a book.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's on my website. It is expected to be much more widely available in the early fall, sometime around October. But wow, you can order it now. It'll be personalized, shipped directly to you once it is printed.
Yay. And then also one final thing, you have a podcast. Tell us what it is and where we can listen to it.
Yes. So the podcast is the Leading with Purpose podcast. We're also on Instagram at Leading with Purpose podcast. And I am on major platforms, Spotify, Apple, Google, and it focuses on women of color and our experiences. And I always try to add a moment of purpose and a moment of leadership in all of the episodes. Again, I am a strong proponent of purpose. I am living, working, walking, being in my purpose. And I love what it is that I do. I love being in a space where I can share my platform to elevate women. So if you want to learn, because there's a lot of, I can't get the academic out. So there's a lot of kind of learning components about it. You'll see that I reference my research a lot because all of that information I think is very valuable as a foundation to learn, but there's always practical information and practical advice because I am a practitioner. I'm more of a practitioner than an academic, and I want to make sure that everyone across the board finds value in it.
Yes, yes, yes. So go and pre-order the book. If you can't pre-order it, we're going to remind you to go and grab it because I want you all to have it. I'm going to get it and I'll be talking about my thoughts and stuff like that on it. And also for those of you who are not able to kind of write right now, Dr. Wajida's, all of her contact information will be on the episode webpage. So if you can look in your podcast player and click there, and it'll take you to all of her links that you can follow and connect with her. Dr. Wajida, I have enjoyed this conversation. It's
me too. Thank you for having me.
I'm listening to you and I'm like, this lady is telling so much. She's telling my business. Like I can just like so much of like some of the experiences you were sharing.
I'm
like, oh my gosh, like I had that too, you know? And that's one of the beautiful things about connecting, you know, which is great. Mm-hmm. So I know this episode is going to resonate very well. So listeners, don't forget to tell us what you think. Shoot me an email, comment on Instagram and let me know. And if you have any questions or thoughts came up for you, let us know that too. All right, ta-ta.
Thank you.
To watch the video episode with today's co-host, visit KeishaShields.com/podcast. Don't forget to hit the subscribe button to be notified of our next episode because you won't want to miss it. Thank you for listening to this episode of She Will Not Be Silenced with Keisha Shields. If you are an executive or highly driven leader ready to amplify your wealth, legacy and your voice on your terms and overcome the impact of feeling silenced, visit KeishaShields.com/hire to work with me one-to-one or to find more information on how to bring me into your company or organization to help support your women leaders.